episode 4, and we are live. Yeah, the Two Point Conversion Podcast. It's Bryce and Daniels, and we got a very special guest on the phone as well, Bryce.
Yeah, absolutely. We have Marcus Mosier. He is a scout with an NFL team right now. He is also the owner of the website Footballogy.com, who happens to be the sponsor of the show. So you guys should definitely go out there and check it out if you ever want to kind of lift the veil back and see what goes on, you know, in a play, in any individual play, and see how they break down. They do a great job there at the site. Marcus and all his staff writers. Marcus, how you doing today?
Doing well, fellas. How you guys doing tonight?
Oh man, it's been a fun weekend.
It's been something. I'll tell you that we were having a little off the air discussion about things not related to football. Of course, the debate.
Yeah,
that was colorful to say the least. But a lot of interesting things going on this week. First of all, I know we're talking Cowboys, but what happened to the Steelers? There's so many questions that I have.
We're going to get to the Steelers. Before we get started on anything else. Before we get started on anything else. I know this is an all football situation, but man, the Jose Fernandez.
I'm glad you mentioned it, man, because I mean, my heart is absolutely broken. I know that first of all, and I want to throw this out there, it doesn't matter his talent, it doesn't matter his potential, his is a human life that we're talking about,
right.
Regardless of the fact that he was Marlins ace or the potential greatest pitcher in baseball, but just an absolute tragedy. I opened up ESPN.com Sunday morning, mm-hmm. and was just absolutely shelled.
For me, it's more about what he represented to Cubans.
Yeah, he was. That's the Cuban American dream,
basically, right? And so, you know, and you think about people in Cuba only know about him through legend because they don't have access to all of the streaming and all that stuff that we have, and basically everything they know about him mm-hmm. is just through legend. There's probably in Cuba already that don't know right now that their legend has passed away. Mm-hmm. Their hero. So that's a really sad situation, and our heart goes out to them.
I was listening to Levitard earlier. He was talking about his either his mom or grandma. I'm assuming it was his mother, but actually it might have been his grandma. That of course their history with that, and she used to be a big Marlins fan. Of course, the way that they managed the team in the 90s, the early 2000s, and then Jose Fernandez finally, like, that was the only games that she would go to, and that's the same for a lot of mm-hmm. A lot of Marlins fans.
Yeah.
It's just a heartbreaking tragedy over the weekend. Jose Fernandez.
Yeah, heart goes out to the whole Marlins organization and Fernandez family and everybody. Okay, so Marcus, we're going to move right on to the Cowboys-Bears. Cowboys take care of the Bears 31-17.
First of all, Bryce, let's not get too excited over there. I know that you're, you know.
Hey, the Bears are who we thought they were.
They are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook. No, it's a win, I guess, for Cowboys fans.
What I've been saying all day is good teams beat up bad teams.
That's true. And they're a bad team.
And that's what the Cowboys did. They took care of business. So that was, as a Cowboy fan, that was really good to see. Zeke with his eating thing, is that what you're just mimicking?
I mean, that's what that was.
He is
a beast for 130 on the crowd. If Zeke, calm your ass down, son. This is week 3 of the NFL. If you do too many of those hurdles, you are going to get hurt, and you're going to get hurt very badly.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Marcus, I'm curious. Whenever I took a look at the game of the film for last week, the game against the Redskins, there was about 3 throws that I saw Dak Prescott make that I was like, that's a big boy NFL throw right there. And that, it's when you see him do those that you know, okay, this guy can do. He can be a legitimate frontline starter for years to come here. Have you looked at the tape from the game this week in the Bears game, and did you see any of those big boy throws?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought in the first week he didn't want to take too many chances. It was a very safe game plan.
Mm-hmm.
Week 2 in Washington, he started to open up a little bit more. This is by far his best performance against the Bears. I thought he had total command of the offense. You saw him changing plays at the line of scrimmage, changing up protection. You saw him spreading the ball around to, I think, 8 different receivers in the game. I'm still in the camp that I want to see more of Dak before I crown him as a franchise quarterback, but everything he has done so far through the first 3 games gives you a great indication that this is going to be the guy the Cowboys can count on for the next 10 years to take them to the next level. I've been very impressed so far. He's got a couple things he needs to tweak. He needs to speed up basically everything in the pocket, but a lot of excitement in Dallas about Dak.
And I think rightfully so as well. You look at his stat line first. It just keeps getting slowly, progressively better in the box score and on the field. 19 for 24, only 5 incompletions. 3 of those are to Dez Bryant, by the way. 248 and a touchdown, no picks. He's just, we're talking game manager, knows how to get things done, knows what he needs to do to win football games. It's a very bright future for Dallas.
Yeah, I think that the future is bright. So one of the qualities that I personally have is that I learn very, very fast. And generally what I do is I'll go from being a complete neophyte at something to pretty good at it really fast, and then I hit a plateau, and it takes a lot of work to get better than pretty good. But my time period from neophyte to pretty good is really, really small, and I kind of feel like Dak has that, because they were talking about on the broadcast how he couldn't even take a snap under center the first day of training camp, and then, you know, now he looks like he's been doing it his whole career. It's fluid for him, so he learns fast. So I'm really excited about just the whenever you see a guy that every week he's adding to it, and something new, it's something new, something new. I really feel like Dak's gonna. He's a great backup now, and like you have said, the potential for him to be a frontline starter is definitely there. I want to move on a little bit to Zeke. I have some kind of,
had some reservations.
I still have some reservations about Zeke. Marcus, I'm wondering what you've seen.
Well, first of all, I had reservations about Zeke going right into the draft. He was actually not my favorite running back in the draft. I loved Derrick Henry, and I loved his fit in Dallas. So I've been kind of labeled as a Zeke hater. But I've got to say, week 3 was by far his most impressive game.
Yeah.
Obviously, he had the 140 rushing yards. But you could see that he's starting to understand this zone concept a little better. After the game, he talked about recognizing his landmarks and where he is supposed to be going on these wide zone runs. And if he can understand these concepts and be a little bit more patient, you're going to start to see him ripping off some really, really big runs. He was so close to about 350-yarder Sunday night. So he's getting there. I think part of it, too, is he's not in shape, and you can see that in week 1. He had no explosiveness.
None.
He's starting to get there. This is something that happened with him at Ohio State, too. He kind of worked himself into shape as the season went along. Mm-hmm. I expect him to get better. Whether he's worth that 4th overall pick, we'll see. But I've been encouraged by how he played in the last 2 games.
Okay, so I have a 2-part question. The first one is, going back, like you said, to week 1, aside from the lack of explosion, the lack of being in shape, did you see on tape running room that Zeke was missing by pressing too hard, by, like they were talking about on the broadcast, hitting the hole too fast? Did you see that, or was it really as bottled up as people think?
It was a little bit of both. The Giants have a fantastic front four, and they could penetrate the Cowboys' offensive line pretty easily. I thought Zeke was pressing a little bit, but that's not to be expected or not expected from a rookie running back. But there really wasn't a lot of running room there. Dallas has made some adjustments. They stopped running so much power and went back to more zone type of runs, and it's helped Zeke. But no, it wasn't his fault in week 1. There just wasn't a lot of room for him to work in that game.
Okay. My second question on this. My personal opinion, whenever I watched Zeke in college, and I'm an Ohio State fan, so I watched every carry Zeke ever did in college, and I kept saying, there's nothing special about this kid. He's not that fast. He's not that big. He's not that powerful. The only special thing he has is his ability to string together a bunch of moves in a really short area, and I have not seen that at all at the pro level. It's get to the second level, make one move on a guy, it might or might not work, and then go down. A lot of times he's fighting for a little extra yardage, but he's not stringing all those moves together. Do you think that's because he's out of shape, the game hadn't come to him yet, or we didn't judge that right at college?
Well, I think it is a little bit if he's out of shape. I think you started to see it a little better in the Chicago game.
A little bit.
I'm actually kind of impressed with his balance. The way he's able to take on some contact and stay up is impressive. But, yeah, you're right. We haven't seen those, the moves at the second level to avoid a linebacker or safety. I think that'll come as he starts seeing things clear. But, no, you're totally right on that right now.
Yeah, I have to agree as well. I think that as this thing progresses and we get it deeper into the season, I think you're going to see more longer runs from Zeke. He just looks like he's getting more and more aggressive. He looks like he's understanding the pro game better with every week, and it's obviously to be expected. I know it's a very generic answer. However, I think it fits his style and his position right now.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I'm still a little bit concerned. I don't like the idea of him not being in shape and working his way into shape. Mm-hmm. That's antithetical to my sensibilities. But I'm looking forward to seeing that the one thing that made him special, because I'm like, aside from the fact that he's really good at everything, but I mean, being special, to me, his only special trait is his ability to string together moves, and he's not doing that yet. I can't wait to see that. We are going to move on to the play of Morris Claiborne. Marcus, you want to give us a little bit of a rundown on how he's been performing the last couple weeks?
Morris Claiborne might be the best defensive player on the Cowboys, and it might not be close. He has put together an incredible first 3 weeks. Now, he hasn't had the turnovers that you expect from a top corner, but yesterday against Chicago was another great example of how much confidence he has. He's tackling better. He's not getting beat over the top. He's not holding as much. Yesterday he was thrown at 12 times, only 6 catches for 50-something yards. That's pretty good, and especially in a game like that where it was kind of out of hand and they were trying to get a lot of garbage yards at the end. Claiborne's a guy that Dallas needs if they're going to be an average defense. They're going to need to put him on the top receiver, and they're going to ask him to maintain him without safety help. And Claiborne's got that ability. It's the whole reason why they traded up to get him at the 6th overall pick, because he's so talented. His feet are so good. He's got length. He's super smart. He doesn't take the ball away as much as we'd like him to, but this is the guy the Cowboys envisioned that they were going to get. If I was Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones, I would be on the phone with his agent right now trying to get a long-term deal worked up, because as this season goes on,
before he makes a Pro Bowl, the price goes up.
Yeah.
That's funny. So one of the things that they've done, and this was much talked about in the offseason, and then it kind of died down, and I haven't seen it really mentioned too much until during the broadcast again on Sunday, is the flipping of Brandon Carr and Morris Claiborne. And that seems to have drastically improved the play of both of them. And coming from a scouting background and a film breakdown background, can you describe to the listener why exactly that would help those two players?
Well, you just get comfortable at one side. Once it's just like an offensive tackle. When you can get your feet in basically muscle memory, where you're doing the same thing on every single snap, you just become a lot more confident in your ability to play. Claiborne is fantastic when you can use his sideline to help him. Because of his length and because of his feet, it's really hard to get completions down the sideline. You saw Hoyer last night just airmail the ball out of bounds about 3 or 4 times, just because there's no spot to throw the ball because of Claiborne's technique and his length.
Yeah,
a little worried about, because you can see the tightness in his hips. I think quicker receivers are going to expose them, and they're going to stop throwing at Claiborne. They're going to target Carr more. But for Claiborne, it's just that muscle memory of knowing exactly how to pedal and look at the quarterback, how to use his arms and his length on the outside.
Okay, that's very interesting. I saw quite a bit of talk today and a little bit yesterday from Cowboys fans basically trying to give Claiborne no credit for the passes that he defensed, quote-unquote defense, and his incomplete motion that he makes for passes that were sailing out of bounds. And I'm going, those passes are sailing out of bounds because he was limiting the receiver's options. He was pinning them on the sideline. The quarterback had nowhere to go with the ball, so he threw it out of bounds. So I just that's kind of what I was getting at when asking the question. I was setting you up to talk about how he uses the sideline to his advantage. So that, well done. I really like that breakdown.
this is not. I see the bullet point here. It is not an overreaction. This has been a problem for more than a year now.
So Daniels is talking about one Mr. Terrence Williams. There's a lot of vitriol being spewed all over Cowboys Nation about Terrence Williams. From a perspective of a guy who watches film and sees everything that goes on, not just when the ball is thrown to a guy, is Cowboy Nation overreacting on Terrence Williams, or is it time to move on from him?
Terrence Williams is a really tough evaluation because he does so many things right. He blocks incredibly well at the outside. He doesn't complain about targets. He's really good in the open field. He's got speed. He's made a bunch of big plays for Dallas. It's just the 10% of the time, the things that he does that just irritate you. Obviously, his fumble last night was a big play, but I'm going to go to a different play. He had a catch in the middle of the field where he jumped up, body caught it, and ended up getting about 25 yards. That's fine. He made the catch. But Dak delivered a perfect strike on that pass. If Terrence Williams just runs through that catch instead of jumping, that's probably a touchdown.
I had that thought live.
For a guy that studies receivers a lot like I do, that's incredibly it's frustrating to watch that because the throw was perfect, the route was perfect, but there's no reason to jump. And those little tiny details is what causes you to kick a field goal instead of scoring a touchdown.
It's football IQ.
Something that's happened with Terrence Williams' entire career. So much of his game is so good, but that little portion that you can't seem to fix is what kind of makes what irritates Cowboy fans so much.
Yeah, his ceiling is
his
low.
Ceiling. It caps his ceiling.
His ceiling is low because he's a body catcher, and you're always going to. He had the catch that should have been in preseason where he tried to wait till it came into his body and the defender got his hand on it.
Staying in bounds in week one.
That's a whole other thing.
but it goes back to that not fully understanding
the game.
Yeah.
You're right. If Marcus Mosier is the GM of the Dallas Cowboys, are we re-signing Terrence Williams?
Yeah, I think you still do because he does a valuable thing for this team. He blocks really well. I mean, Dallas would like to run 50% of the time. He can stretch the field. I mean, you know what you have in Terrence Williams, and I know they want to get more dynamic, but that second receiver in this scheme is not going to get a lot of targets.
Right,
I think people are thinking of some of these offenses where you have two elite guys on the outside. Well, that's not what Dallas wants to do. They want to feed the ball to Dez, they want to get it to Cole, and they want to run the ball.
Right.
That second receiver just needs to block and needs to make plays when he's given the chance. He doesn't need to be dynamic.
Four receptions, 88 yards, four targets.
Yeah.
Four catches, four targets. I mean,
yeah. It's hard to...
Marcus nailed it on the head. You know what you get with Terrence Williams.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, just answer this question quickly. Are you shocked at all that the receiver that the Cowboys have chose to be the guy that motions down into the line and blocks defensive ends and linebackers is Little Lucky Whitehead?
No, because we saw him do it in college a lot, and he's tough.
Every time I see that, I'm like... There's not a bigger receiver we can get to do that. It's Lucky Whitehead. Okay. I mean, he's effective at it. He's really good at it. But
somebody's going to break him in half.
Lucky knows what he's doing down there. He likes to get down and dirty there.
He does.
That's true.
Okay, Marcus, we're going to move on to the Eagles absolutely waxing the Steelers 34-3.
Oh, almost needed a new TV.
Yeah, that was insane. Can you give me a little breakdown on Carson Wentz and what you think about the future of this kid?
Absolutely. So I live in Pennsylvania, so I hate both of these teams pretty equally. However,
amen.
I am very impressed with Carson Wentz. That's a team that historically does not lose to rookie quarterbacks, and I thought Carson Wentz was going to struggle against that team. I thought Keith Butler was going to blitz him, and Carson Wentz tore up that defense. He looked like... he looked like what Tom Brady does to that Pittsburgh defense. He was poised. He was accurate. He didn't panic when there was pressure in his face. Carson Wentz is the real deal. And I think if you're a Cowboys fan, if you're a fan in the NFC, you got to be worried that Carson Wentz and the Eagles are a real threat this year. Not long term, but this year.
And that's what I was telling. That's what I was telling people today. You're not. You don't need to be worried about the Giants. Obviously not the Redskins. It's the Eagles, and they don't look like they're losing anytime soon. This is a guy who turned the team that he had. I mean, obviously they were at home, but home field only does so much. And Pittsburgh looked like a top three, top two, top four, somewhere in their team coming into last week. And Philadelphia just dismantled them from top to bottom. I mean, the defense did a whole lot. But you look at this offense, and you've got two rookies that led the way yesterday. And that's Carson Wentz and Wendell Smallwood out of West Virginia. Smallwood, I mean, he didn't do a whole lot, but 17 on the ground for 79 and a touchdown. The resurgence of Darren Sproles. Carson Wentz is doing a lot with not a lot. And Jordan Matthews wasn't even a vital part of that game yesterday.
Right. I thought Jordan Matthews was the only legit receiving option they had on that team before the season.
Yep.
And that Carson Wentz has kind of taken that out of the mix a little bit. What do you think about the Wentz versus Dak comparison, and what are we looking at here for the future? Do you think that we're going to get a decade of just great football out of these two guys, and just that Cowboys-Eagles rivalry just taking another level up?
Hopefully, because these guys are both fun to watch. But let's look at Wentz. Wentz is the big, athletic, strong-arm kid. Hasn't been tested a lot in college. I mean, he played at North Dakota State, and they won championships after championships. But it's a guy that plays under control. He can make every throw on the field. Where Dak, on the other hand, is a little smaller. He doesn't have the big arm. I believe his velocity at the combine was like 52 compared to Wentz's 59. So he doesn't have that massive cannon. But what Dak does so well is play poise. He's so calm in the pocket. Mm-hmm. The game is never too big for him. I think these guys are totally different in terms of their style of play, but they're both guys that they work hard, and they know that when the game is close, they're not going to make the mistakes. They're going to play within themselves, and they're going to have a lot of success, both the Cowboys and the Eagles, in the future because these guys know how to play the game. They're very smart. They work hard, and their teams believe them. And both of them are great leaders, and that at the quarterback position is a huge part of it. If your team believes that you are going to make the play to win the game,
they fight a little
really
harder.
Yeah.
You can see the Cowboys' offensive line and the way that they protect Dak. And I don't mean protect him as in pass protection. I'm talking about pick him up off the ground,
exactly,
cleaning guys off the pile. And all like they're, you can tell that they have a lot of respect for him.
Marcus used a word that I think just completely describes Dak, and it's one that I've used multiple times. It's poise. He is the personification of a poise quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those guys. I think they mentioned it on the broadcast, and I go back to that because I do think that the commentators on the broadcast Sunday night were really good, talking about how Dak's heart rate is just, it just stays the same.
Yeah.
It doesn't drop real high. It doesn't spike real high.
Game, yep.
It just stays right at the same. You know, it's really, really impressive. Real, real fast, Marcus, is it time to push the panic button in Pittsburgh?
No, they still got the second-best quarterback in the entire AFC. They'll be fine.
They'll be fine.
Yeah, no.
Okay, Marcus, I promised several people that we've been promoting the show around, and I promised a bunch of people we would talk about this a little bit, so let's just take a couple minutes to talk about this, and then we'll let you go. Let's say let's say the Cowboys are 6-2 when Romo gets healthy. Are we looking at a situation with a quarterback controversy? Do you put him in? What do you do in that situation?
You know, I don't think there's any way that Romo loses his job. Stephen Jones just said today that when Tony Romo comes back, this is his team. Dak is still limited on what he can do with the offense, where we know Romo has complete control. The guys believe in Tony. I think this is Romo's team unless he shows that his body just can't keep up with him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we need to worry about that. Dak has even admitted that he's just filling in for Tony. I want to see Romo play at a high level. If we just see that he just can't do it anymore, it's time to turn it over to Dak. But no, this is Romo's team still.
Marcus, let me ask you this. Is it what do you think about that situation? Because I am not completely convinced that his body is going to allow him to play at the highest level or the high level anymore. Do you think Romo can come back?
I mean, Romo is one of the toughest quarterbacks we have in the NFL right now. So I'm not going to doubt him, but I am pessimistic that he can't come back at the top level that we saw in 2014 and even start with 2015. But I'm hoping because he's so much fun to watch. But, yeah, he might not be able to do it. It's going to be interesting to watch.
Okay. So I pointed this out on the morning show this morning when we talked a little football. The one thing for me personally that I really like for Dak over Romo, and believe there's not a bigger advocate for Romo than I am, okay? I'm a huge supporter of the guy. But the one thing that I can't get past is pre-snap, when Romo's in the game, it's a circus. There's just stuff, the histrionics going on everywhere. He's pointing. It's crazy. We're always snapping the ball with one-tenth of a second left on the play clock. And Dak, there's none of that. He just goes up to the line and, you know, points at a couple of guys and snaps the ball and then throws a 30-yard dart to Terrence Williams. So do you think that's just purely the difference in their style of play, or is there more at work there?
Well, I think part of it is, too, the coaches limiting what Dak can do with the line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, they'll give him two calls. They'll give him a run and a pass play, and Frederick is now making all the line calls. But when Romo's in there, Romo has complete control over the entire playbook. He has multiple plays, multiple pass and run plays. Maybe the rest of the offense, this is better for the rest of the offense because they can just focus on those two plays instead of the entire playbook. But, no, that's a great observation by you.
So that's kind of what I was thinking was just I think Romo can handle all of that, but I'm not sure everyone on the offense can handle that. I almost feel like maybe they could keep having all the other plays but still let Terrence Frederick make the line calls or something, like take a little bit off of Romo's plate and let the communication flow a little better. Marcus, we're going to let you go. We really, really appreciate you being on the show, and we really appreciate you sponsoring the show. It's really, really great of you.
Hey, thanks, Oz. Anytime.
All right, man. We'll talk to you soon. That was Marcus Mosier, the owner of the website Footballogy.com. He is also an active NFL scout, breaking down the little film for us, giving us a little insight that we might not have otherwise able to get.
A lot of good insight, I thought. And again, Footballogy.com, it's a study of all things football. Major sponsor on the show, and we can't talk about those guys enough.
Okay, we are going to move on to...
This would be the time, if we had... This would be a commercial break time. However,
if we had
commercials, it's the infancy. It's the infancy.
It'd be nice to see the spot.
You see the holes when they're given.
You try
to hit them.
So the Patriots demolished the Texans 27-0.
So the Patriots are good.
I mean, I have just a few little. There's not a lot to talk about in this game. I have just a few little things. Number one, Jacoby Brissett.
Jacoby.
Hold on.
Jacoby?
You saw his touchdown run, right?
Of course. That's the longest run from a New England Patriot quarterback since 1976.
Jacoby Brissett's super fast, right?
Apparently.
His 40 time at the combine was like slower than both Manning brothers.
What is it? It's
like 4.9.
Yeah, I was going to say 4.8.
He ran a 4.9 40, and when you watch that run, you're like...
Let's just be honest. Houston wasn't playing football. I'm not exactly sure. We haven't figured out what sport Houston was playing on last Monday
night. Maybe somebody lied to him and told him it was soccer or rugby
Thursday or
whatever.
It wasn't football.
Osweiler,
24 for 41, didn't even get over 200 yards.
I'm calling that guy Fool's Gold. I've been calling him Fool's Gold since last year. I don't think he's a good quarterback. I think that's going to be a $17 million a year mistake for Houston.
That's a lot of millions.
Is it time for panic in Houston?
I mean, they're 2-1. They're 2-1. They just lost to probably an AFC championship team. I mean, New England's going to get Tom Brady back. They're going to have all their
weapons. Well, that's my point. You can't beat Jacoby Brissett. You got no chance against Tom Brady.
Nobody could. Maybe not Jacoby Brissett. I'm sorry. Nobody could beat New England. Nobody. Arizona lost week one. I mean.
Yeah, well, but that would be.
Okay.
Beat and gets just mollywopped by. That's two different things. Well, I mean, the Patriots just destroyed them, made them look like they weren't even playing the sport of football.
I mean,
that's concerning.
When you can't get the ball to your guys, to Hopkins. Hopkins had 8 targets. He got 4 passes for 56 yards. Will Fuller had 7 targets, 3 catches for 31 yards. I mean, when Ryan Griffin is getting 10 targets and catching 8 of those for 52 yards and he's leading the team in targets, you've got big problems against a team like New England that knows what to do. And they know that, hey, yeah, Brissett is what he is, but we've got this guy named LeGarrette Blount. He's going to carry the ball 24 times for 105 to 2 touchdowns.
Okay, one word answer. Are you praying like I am that neither Garoppolo nor Brissett get healthy this week so Edelman plays quarterback?
I want to see it so bad.
That wasn't a one-way answer. You're awful at this game. We're going to move on.
There's no one-way answer. I've been foaming at the mouth. I've been chomping at the bit. I want to see Edelman under center the entire game.
Yeah, me too. Oh. Me too. I think that would be awesome.
7 touchdowns? I mean, what? Do I start him? That's the question. If he plays quarterback, do I start him? I think the answer is, you know, can he throw the ball to himself?
Oh, my goodness. All right, so we're going to move on to the Bills easily dispatching the Cardinals 33-18.
What the hell? Without Sammy Watkins.
Yes, without Sammy Watkins. I got a lot of stuff on this game. Number one, these weird scores due to the mixed extra points.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
Every time.
There was two teams that scored 18 points this week.
It never fails. You watch it at a bar or wherever you are. Is there a penalty? It looks like they're kicking the extra point from 40 yards away. I mean, it never fails.
I've gotten used to it.
I like it.
But no, I love it because it does add. The whole point was that they wanted people to stop walking away
when there's an extra point.
I love it, but it's just crazy the weird scores you're seeing a lot of those.
4 picks for Palmer. Carson can't throw 4 picks, especially not to Buffalo. 5 sacks, too. Arizona had a real bit. And John Brown leading the team in all targets and receptions again, or not again, but just for another, just the roulette wheel is revolving in Arizona.
It's just different people all the time.
Yeah, they don't have a number one receiver,
That can be an advantage if you work it. I think the flaw in the Cardinals offense right now is that it is all vertical.
all they want to do is attack you vertically. And if you run a lot of cover four, a lot of cover six, a lot of cloud coverage, you can kind of take away what they do offensively. They need to find some horizontalness to that offense.
I think the problem in that is that their running back isn't exactly that type of running back. They've got David Johnson. Obviously, they have CJ, we'll say 500K now. It's not CJ 2K because that's not him anymore.
Right.
Chris Johnson's the actual runner of the running backs, and you just, when you play Arizona, you know what to expect. You know how to defend it, and you know what they're going to do.
Right. Yeah, I really think that. I really think that they've gotten very predictable in offense, and I'm a big fan of Bruce Arians. I think he's a fantastic coach. I think they need to start tweaking the offense a little bit, and I think they will. I think they will.
Yeah, they're going
to
figure it out.
But right now, there's too much verticality to that offense, and they need to scale that back a little bit. What about Tyrod Taylor, man? Is he becoming a star in this league?
I wouldn't call him a star. I think he's got a lot of assets. I think he has a lot of positives, a lot of things he needs to work on. It's not the most impressive stat line, but again, he's a winner. He's a winner.
That's one of my themes for the show today. There are people who are winners, and there are teams who just don't. They're not winners.
Yep.
One way, I'm not saying that they're not capable of it, but not showing.
You hit the nail on the head. You hit it bang on. When you've got a guy like Shady, LeSean McCoy, who hasn't got the usage and the talent, or not the talent, but the credit that he deserves in recent years. I mean, you saw a couple of slow years with Philadelphia. 17 carries for 110 and 2 touchdowns?
He was a monster, man.
Get out of here.
What's weird is I watched that game, and if I had just watched, without knowing the stats, if I had just watched the Bills game and just watched the Cowboys game, I would have thought Shady ran for more yards than Zeke.
Yeah.
Like, his runs were more impressive. Shady looked incredible. Do you think the offensive coordinator change in Buffalo is going to help that offense? It seems to have on Sunday.
Yeah, it certainly seems to have. And when I think a lot of this is that defense. When you're not on the field as much as you normally are with that defense, that means your offense is getting time to rest. That means all the pieces are getting time to downtime like they need. Four interceptions for that defense in Buffalo, 3 forced fumbles. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on moving forward. And without Sammy Watkins?
Without Sammy Watkins.
That's big.
That's big. Yeah, Tyrod Taylor played very well.
Yes.
Played, he doesn't have the poise like Dak has the poise, but he plays within himself quite well. And you can see he makes a lot of really good decisions, which you want to see from your quarterback.
He's very fast as well. I want to say he ran for about 40 or 50.
Being fast helps. Yes. He also had like a 25-yard touchdown run.
Yep.
He probably got there faster than Jacoby Brissett, who runs a 4.9.
So neither of whom are Houston's going to find or catch.
Yes.
This just is not awful.
Okay, so speaking of teams that just can't win, just don't know how to do it, the Titans lose to the Raiders 17-10.
Head scratcher. Mariota looked terrible. Barely completed half his passes. Just grazed 200 yards, 2 picks, no touchdowns. DeMarco Murray looking real good, but Tennessee is probably in some trouble.
So that was one of my first questions. Is DeMarco Murray a legit fantasy option right now?
Absolutely. I was hailing this guy all week at 6,200 or 6,800, whatever he was, whatever the price was, pay it. Because you know why? Not only are you getting those 100-yard a game with the bonuses, especially on DraftKings, and you're scoring touchdowns on the ground, he's one of the leading receivers. He had 5 catches on 5 targets, 41 yards. That's 9.1 in a PPR. DeMarco Murray is definitely a legit fantasy,
fantasy option.
Especially when you look at Tennessee. Who else do they have? T.J. Yes. Sharp is going to eventually turn into a viable wide receiver in this league, but he's not there
yet.
He's not there yet. You lose D'Angelo or Delanie Walker. There's so many D's. You lose Delanie Walker, and who else do you have? It's got to be DeMarco
Murray. It's got to be DeMarco Murray. Do you knock him down a peg in non-PPR leagues? He had like 80 yards rushing last week and like 79 the week before.
He maybe half a peg, but I still really like
still
this guy.
Like him. I think he is maybe your flex.
I think he's the main touchdown option on this Tennessee team, and that's not really saying much, seeing as how they only scored 1 this week.
Right.
DeMarco Murray is very viable.
It was nice to see the Raiders D step up. They put a lot of resources into that defense, and you thought they were going to be better, and they were ranked 32 going into the week. I don't know what their ranking is now, but it was nice to see them step up a little bit.
2-1 for the Raiders. Look out too. They apparently have that revolving roulette wheel on the ground as well, because you've got Washington, Latavius Latavius Murray and Jalen Richard, my boy out of, I believe, Arizona State, just 6-10-6, 6 carries, 10 carries, and 6. So Latavius Murray might be losing a little bit of work there.
Yeah, he is. He's definitely losing work there. That hurts my fiance's fantasy team. So we're going to move on to the Dolphins and Browns.
Why not?
Cody first question. Hold on. Yeah, Cody Kessler those 5 touchdowns. Yeah. Kind of the flow of the show we have now is I ask you the questions about the game and you answer the questions.
Of course.
The first question I have about this game is, does it hurt you to be so wrong all the time?
As far as the spread? I mean,
like,
Miami...
Does it hurt your feelings? Like,
you want to talk spread or you want to talk fantasy? Because Marvin Jones, I nailed the game. Ryan Tannehill, over 300 yards passing, 3 touchdowns. Jarvis Landry, 120,
touchdown. You made it sound like there was no way the Browns could keep within 10 points
of the
Dolphins. I'm
sorry. I didn't realize Terrell Pryor was going to score 2 touchdowns and go off for 150 yards. My fault.
So, yes, it does hurt you when you're wrong. Clearly, you're emotionally attached to this.
Did Miami win the football game?
They did.
Exactly.
Did they cover the spread?
10 points. Get out of here.
So, what the hell on Terrell Pryor, man? What the hell? Again, Ohio State fan. I saw every snap he took in college. I watched everything.
None of these were his wide receiver, by the way.
Right. I used to always comment on the fact that it's not a coincidence that his initials are TP and his number is 2. Okay? I was not a fan of that guy in college, what he was doing at quarterback. What he's doing at receiver right now is shocking.
Look, this guy I'm not going to call him the real deal. I'm not. But moving forward as a fantasy option, just taking a look at week 4 coming up in DraftKings. I haven't looked at him yet, but I guarantee he's going to be somewhere around 4,000, and he had 14 targets. Not only did he have 14 targets, he had like 1,050 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns. 144 and 2 touchdowns. Look, I was wrong with the spread. Whatever.
Right.
8 catches, 144 yards, 14 targets, 2 touchdowns. Apparently, Cody Kessler can throw the football.
I was good. Should the Browns stick with Cody Kessler?
Not 2 touchdowns. I'm sorry. 144 yards. Do you have a choice?
Well, okay. When other people come back healthy. Let's say RG3.
No.
You feel about RG3 about the same way that I do?
No.
Okay, so you're sticking with Kessler. If you're the Browns front office and all your quarterbacks are healthy, you're starting Kessler next week. The Kessler prior
isn't this kind of a mirror of the presidential election? You've got Josh McCown
crap
or
versus
Cody Kessler
versus crap.
Either way, how did the Browns front office allow him to get to this point? You're going to come into the season with RG3, Josh McCown, and Cody Kessler. That's what we're going with.
To borrow a famous line from Mr. Parcells, it's not like you can just dial 1-800 quarterback. Unless you're the Cowboys and get a star in the fourth round.
Yeah.
Or after getting a free agent star, their luck with the quarterback situation looks to be incredible for 20.
He just happened to run the football as well. 34.9 Terrell Pryor on DraftKings. He's 4,300 this week. I'm not saying to get him in your lineup, but they're playing Washington.
Right. So, last question. Should Dolphins fans be worried?
I think Dolphins fans should be significantly worried. It's getting real close. You've got Devontae Parker coming back. There's positives. You've got Devontae Parker coming back. He scored a touchdown now, I believe, in back-to-back games. Jarvis Landry is obviously the number one guy there, but you've got no running back, and I think it showed. Jay Ajayi, big fan of. He's not there yet as far as NFL goes.
Yeah, and apparently the coaching staff there is not too enamored with him. So, boring game. Ravens beat the Jaguars 19-17.
If you slept through it, you did yourself a favor.
Jags don't know how to win.
No, that is a team where it needs to push the panic button. Jacksonville is in big trouble. And
so, I really thought that this year, not necessarily they were going to take the leap to be an awesome
Bay
team.
Game.
Well, not just just the ending of last year. They get Miles Jack and Jalen Ramsey in the draft. I think there was one other player that I was a big fan of. I can't think of who it is right offhand. But they have Dante Fowler coming back from injury. He's a top 5 pick from the previous year. You know, Blake Bortles has been improving. Alan Hearns and Allen Robinson and Julius Thomas.
Yeah,
fantastic
your passing
receiving
game
core.
Is looking strong.
Like, I don't understand what is the problem. Why can't they win? And then I get back to what we've talked about earlier. You have to learn how to win.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes a while. I really thought that this was going to be the year the Jaguars, like maybe not, you know, a make noise in the playoffs, but
started to learn how to win and look like they might turn into something. And right now it's looking like they might be drafted in the top five again.
Yeah, it is looking that way.
That really sucks for Jacksonville. They've got to learn how to win.
You want to talk about somebody who does know how to win, and it's even if he doesn't have a great game, it's Joe Flacco.
Joe Flacco, man.
You don't even have a running back in Baltimore right now at the moment. Terrence West, Cleveland wants away. Steve Smith showing back up with 11 targets. Again, there's that roulette wheel. And mm-hmm. Mike Wallace, no touchdowns. It's okay.
He dropped one.
Nine this weekend.
He dropped one. The defensive back got his hand in there a little bit, but a legit receiver has to catch that.
Yeah.
Mike Wallace needed to catch that pass, and we'd have been going crazy this week if he'd caught that one because he just keeps catching touchdown passes.
You got big problems in Jacksonville. When you're only targeting your tight end, your big-name tight end, Julius Thomas, five targets. He only had 13 yards. Now, Allen Robinson got involved, two touchdowns.
Yep.
You got to get a ground game. You got to get some kind of ground game.
Yes.
T.J. Yeldon is not doing it. 6 for 17. Chris Ivory back first week, 12 for 14. I mean, these guys are averaging like 1.6 a carry.
Yeah.
You got to get a ground game.
Got to get it
done. And you got to get some help for Bortles because he had four sacks. Mm-hmm. You can't.
Yeah,
none of these things add up to a
Cowboys
win.
Cast off Jeremy Parnell, starting at right tackle for them, is not playing real well right now. Real quickly, before we moved on, we mentioned Jalen Ramsey earlier, mm-hmm. the high draft pick. Made a play. The first time, his first play, it wasn't an interception, but he tipped a ball that got intercepted, but he was the reason it was intercepted. He got a hand on it. Made a play for the first time. It's good to see him do that. We are going to move on to the Packers.
Yeah, does it hurt me to be wrong all the time, Bryce? You tell me. Who? I mean...
What?
You don't remember this?
No.
Sam
Rodgers is going to come back?
Yeah, let's just... Might want to get Aaron Rodgers in your lineups. This is a guy who could throw four touchdowns in one half. I'm pretty sure that's a quote. He didn't do anything in the second half because he didn't need to.
I'm going to have to get the presidential fact checkers in here on this deal. I don't know about that.
Jordy Nelson.
He looked like 2014.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
of course.
Pure and simple. He looked like 2014. Marvin Jones.
I wanted to see what. We don't even need to talk. I'm going to. But we don't even need to talk about how right I was there because Marvin Jones. You want to talk about
both of us
legitimate wide receiver in the NFL? Yeah. If you don't know who Marvin Jones is until last week, you do now.
It's so funny. My fiance's fantasy team, her coworker was trying to flip her Arian Foster, and we were like, no, we're not interested in Arian. And he was like, well, what about for Marvin Jones? And we're like, no. And he's, you going to turn down a starting running back for a second string receiver? And I was like, this is because you don't know anything about fantasy football. And so every week we just send him a message with Marvin Jones' stat line.
I love it.
Little trash talk is always fun in fantasy football. Rodgers was amazing in the first half.
He was. He didn't have any second half action because Cheeseburger had 17 carries for 103.
Yeah, Eddie Lacy eating up yardage for once. That was my comment.
Nice. What Aaron Rodgers does, maybe better than any other quarterback in the league, is spread the football around. And it didn't just go to Jordy Nelson. It didn't go to Randall Cobb. However, Davante Adams getting in the action with a touchdown. Richard Rodgers getting in the action with a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Jordy is obviously his top guy. 7 targets, 6 catches for 101 yards, 2 touchdowns. I want to see what they're going to do moving forward.
I'm curious about that. There was a lot of talk. Basically, starting about Thursday last week, if you pay real close attention to the things that people around the different organizations are saying, and there was a lot of people who've been with the Packers for a long time since Rodgers first kind of had his breakout, who were saying that he was kind of like the old Rodgers. He was being more detail-oriented, mm-hmm. and he was spending a little extra time in the film room and stuff. And you have to wonder if he ate the cheese a little bit. I know that's a kind of a Packers pun, but... You have to wonder if he ate the cheese a little bit and kind of drank the Kool-Aid, as they say, or whatever, and realized, okay, it doesn't matter that I'm the best quarterback in the NFL. I still have to work at it if I want to be that.
And he does have to work at it, but he knows that. And he is that type of leader. He's mm-hmm. a winner, Bryce.
He's absolutely a winner.
Green Bay's 2-1. Detroit in some problems. I know Matt Stafford threw for 385 and 3 touches, but it's not all about stats, especially when you look at the standings and when you look at that division.
Yep.
Minnesota just going to break some Detroit hearts this year.
Yeah, we're going to get back to Minnesota. We got a couple of games to go between here and there. We're going to look at the Broncos 29-17 over the Bengals.
Emmanuel Sanders looked like 2014.
Hey, Trevor Siemian apparently knows how to throw the football.
Yeah, Trevor Siemian throwing four touchdown passes.
Yeah, shades of Peyton Manning. Watched a couple of those Peyton on Sunday morning commercials, I guess.
Yeah. that'll help you a lot.
Tell you what didn't help me, C.J. Anderson.
That
was such a great matchup. It was such a great matchup.
CJ's always a guy to me that I'm like, I would always be weary of him. He's going to be a beast a lot of times, but sometimes you're going to have a little problem.
Denver 3-0. What do you think about Jeremy Hill for Cincinnati? He had two touchdowns in the, I believe, first half.
Since he came into the league, nobody scored more touchdowns than Jeremy Hill.
Yep.
I don't know if you know that, but it's one of those little things. He's a beast, man.
He likes to score touchdowns.
He scores touchdowns. There's no question about it. You may not get all the yardage and all that stuff that comes along with some other backs, but he's going to score touchdowns. That's always, you know, it's always a plus when you got a guy scoring touchdowns.
Yeah, that's a thing.
It definitely is a thing. Emmanuel Sanders, again, looked like 2014 again. He was on point. I don't know how much of that game you actually watched, but Emmanuel Sanders was on one. He looked really, really good. Andy Dalton, throughout his career, has struggled to beat good teams.
Yes, he has.
He's a really good quarterback. He feasts on bad teams. He beats mediocre to decent teams. And when you're playing against the really good teams, he struggles. As one of the biggest proponents for Tony Romo there is, I understand that it's not all about the quarterback.
A lot of it is about the quarterback.
This
is 2016.
And he's been there a long time. They've had a lot of talent.
Let's look at the pieces. Other than potentially the greatest receiver in Cleveland history, or Cincinnati history, in A.J. Green. I mean, he's not there yet, but a couple more years.
He might be the best. Yeah. I don't know about greatest, because when you look at a body of work, but he might be the most talented receiver to ever play in Cincinnati.
Other than that, what do you have?
Chad Johnson. During his prime, he was a beast.
Yep.
Chris Collinsworth.
We're not talking about idiot Collins. I hate Collinsworth. And you mentioned the announcers on Sunday night. Oh, they sounded so. Oh, yeah, that's what. Yeah.
I can't stand
Chris Collinsworth.
Oh, I think he's the best color guy in the NFL.
Oh, he's the most infuriating color guy. But no, look at who else they have other than A.J. Green, who had 11 targets. He did what he could with them. I mean, you got what? Brandon LaFell? Tyler Boyd out of Pittsburgh?
Brandon LaFell had a pretty good season with Cam.
Well, yeah. You got Gio, who's playing more and more.
Bust!
At least he's getting targets. Who are you going to throw the football to is what I'm getting at. You have no Mamba Sanu.
Yeah. Letting Sanu and Marvin Jones Jr. go.
You have no Marvin Jones.
Looks kind of silly.
Yeah.
Looks kind of silly at this point. Definitely losing those guys hasn't helped. But over the course of his career, the point that I'm making is that he hasn't been able to beat good teams.
And you're
right. He's going to need to figure that out.
I think Cincinnati might be scratching their head a little bit.
A little bit.
For more than a couple of weeks. Cincinnati might struggle this year.
So now you can talk about the Vikings.
Is it the Vikings that we talk about? Obviously it is. But you can't have this game discussion and not bring up Kelvin Benjamin, one target, zero receptions.
That defense is legit in Minnesota.
They are swarming all over
in
the place.
In week one, I was like, they looked really good. In week two, I was like, this defense looks like it might be something that there might be something to that. I mean, they shut down Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
For the most part. And then after this week, okay, there's no doubt that this defense, that middle linebacker they got, Kendricks, oh, man, that guy's a beast.
You want to play a little game called How Many Sacks Do the Vikings Have? The number is 8.
8 sacks.
8.
Wow.
On Cam Newton. Forced 3 interceptions. They didn't do anything else. It's not like the Vikings offense blew anybody away. We threw for more passing yards than Sam Bradford and also more reception yards than my boy Stephon Diggs. Kyle Rudolph was the main guy, 10 targets, 70 yards and a touchdown. Sam Bradford only threw for 171 and a touchdown. It's not like the running backs got it done. Jerick McKinnon is the main guy apparently now, 16 carries for 45 yards. The defense shut Carolina down and just made them pay every single time.
Every single time. I'm pretty convinced at this point that at about the year 2050 or so, Terrence Newman's still going to be getting a pick every once in a while for some team in the league. That guy, and he's in better shape than pretty much everybody in the NFL right now. That guy's really impressive. So I have a question.
I think we have the same question.
Does Kyle Rudolph look uninterested to you?
He always looks uninterested. Kyle Rudolph is one of, if not the most uninterested tight ends in football. He just kind of scampers down, and all of a sudden when the ball's in the air, oh, I'm going to look up. And
I mean, even when he caught the touchdown pass, he was just kind of like, eh, put his arms up like, oh, okay, I just caught a touchdown. And then a little bit later on, they threw a corner route to him. He got an offensive pass interference on the call, but he didn't catch it, but it hit his hands, and I mean, he should have caught it. It should have been a touchdown pass. Now, of course, the offensive, you know, that would have taken it away. Mm-hmm. But even as the ball hit his hands and flew, he just kind of went.
He just doesn't care.
Okay, and I'm, man, as a football guy.
You hate that.
Oh, seething. God, I just.
Seething. That's one reason boiling. I can't. Oh, let me take Kyle Rudolph and see some shit like that. Oh, seething. Let me ask you a question, Bryce. Who is scratching their heads more? Who needs to worry more at 1-2? Is it Arizona or Carolina?
I'm going to say that it is Carolina needs to worry more because I think Arizona can fix their problems schematically, and I think Carolina can only fix their problems through talent acquisition, and you can't do that in the middle of the season. So I think for this season, it's a scheme problem for Arizona. I have a lot of faith in Bruce Arians to fix that. I would say Carolina needs to be a little more worried, but my gut feeling is both teams
are going
to
level out.
They're both righting the ship a little bit. Yep. Yeah.
Oh, we move on.
Redskins Giants. This game was a battle of which two quarterbacks could look worse.
Yeah.
They were really fighting it out.
They really were.
They were really trying.
Kirk Cousins was giving it a go. He was doing all that he could to lose.
And Eli just would not let him.
No.
Eli was like, no, I'm the worst quarterback. I'm going to win this, win/lose.
Yep.
Lose. I'm confused now, okay? were they trying to lose?
They both looked like they were trying to lose. Eli Manning, how do you put the ball on the ground like Eli does? Some of the things that Eli Manning does are just beyond head-scratching. And Kirk Cousins looks... Allie thinks he looks awful. Big Washington Redskins fan, but... I think you got problems in both areas, and you got problems because Philadelphia's a thing, and they're in your division.
Yeah, and it looks like Dallas is going to be legit,
Dallas is
too.
A thing. Dallas
it looks
is
like Dallas
thing.
Is going to be legit. That defense has problems over there in Dallas, but as long as the quarterbacks, both of them, whichever one you want to play.
Yeah, they don't have too many problems because both Washington and New York are in the division.
Oh, God. So, Jamison Crowder, a legit fantasy option?
He's getting there. I like Jamison Crowder, man.
I really
he came
do
out
too.
Of Duke 2 years ago, I believe, and he is... 4 catches, 78 yards on 7 targets and a touchdown. Who else are you going to throw to in Washington? Pierre Garçon.
Well, here's the thing. Here's what I'm thinking. Jamison Crowder is a decent weekly fantasy option now. He's probably not the best daily fantasy option. There's probably better things. But if you're in a dynasty league and you can pick up Jamison Crowder, now's the time to do it because... His stock's going to increase. Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson are both going to move on, and this guy's a legit slot receiver, and so much of the NFL is going to this slot receivers getting high volumes of passes like Cole Beasley in Dallas,
well, you can
Julian Edelman in New England,
you can make a comparison to the opposite end of the spectrum as far as in this game goes to Sterling Shepard.
Yes, exactly. Sterling Shepard is a perfect example, perfect analog between the two of those guys.
I think Shepard's stock is a little bit higher now, but they both have a lot of potential.
Yeah, no,
I'm a big Jamison Crowder
fan. Sterling Shepard is definitely a better option for daily fantasy and that sort of thing. Right now, Jamison Crowder still has he plays on the worst offense. Yeah. Of the two, he plays on a worse offense.
What happened to Jordan Reed?
Jordan
Reed. Kirk's just not looking his way like he was last year.
I don't know. I've been a little concerned about that. He played really well last week against Byron Jones. That game between Byron Jones, the game within the game between Byron Jones and Jordan Reed was so much fun to watch on tape. Those two were just battling it out. Sometimes Byron won, sometimes Jordan won. It was awesome. This week, I don't know why they couldn't get him involved. Maybe the Giants scheme to take him away.
It might be Kirk can't throw the ball.
Can't
get him the ball.
If you mention a Redskin offensive problem, that might be the solution, the reason for it right there. You don't have to go any further than that. Okay, so for the what-the-hell game of the week.
Well, what do you do before we move on? What do you do if you're New York now? You lost Shane Vereen for the entire season. Rashad Jennings is Rashad Jennings. Darkwa, 10 carries for 53 yards and a touchdown.
Does Orleans Darkwa become a fantasy option at this point?
I think he's a thing. I don't know if he's an absolute thing.
Right.
But
maybe, again, for people who are hurting in
the running
back. Shane
Vereen is out for the season.
Shane Vereen's out for the season. I hadn't seen that news come out yet already, so you've got that confirmed?
I'm almost positive I saw that earlier
today.
Okay,
so I knew that Shane Vereen
Like I wrote down here from, on my prep, Shane Vereen could be a thing if not for fumbling.
Yeah. Suffers triceps injury. Season over.
Season over. Okay.
He's for the
well,
year.
That is going to. Wow, that hurts their what they're doing so much.
Rashawn
Jennings is a pretty good running back.
He's not bad, but he can't do what Shane Vereen does.
No, he can't. You know, if you're in a PPR league, Orleans Darkwood might be a flex guy for you.
He's an option.
If he's your number one running back, you're screwed.
You want to talk about what the hell?
So let's
LA's 2-1. But I'll just repeat that because it's a sentence that bears repeating. The Los Angeles Rams are 2-1.
What the hell, man?
What the hell? You've heard of Come On Man? This might be our set. What the hell?
What the hell? Guys that need to learn how to win football games. James Winston.
Might be top of the list.
Him and Blake Bortles are right up there hanging out together. No question about it. Jameis Winston needs to learn how to win. That kid's got so much talent.
Oh.
It is his talent, his potential is through the roof. Sometimes when I pop in a little bit of Buccaneers tape just to watch a little player here or there. Well, it is kind of painful, but man, this guy makes some throws, and I'm like, how do you even see that? The anticipation and stuff, he's got to put it all together.
He has to. Look, you look at the stat line, and the potential is there. He threw 405 yards, three touchdowns, and a pick.
Yep.
And not to mention, my boy, or going to become my boy, Adam Humphries.
Yeah.
9 catches, 100 yards.
Adam Humphries is a thing.
He's a thing.
Adam Humphries is a thing. There's no question.
So was Cameron Brait, apparently. 2 touchdowns for the tight end.
Okay. I'm chalking that up to an aberration until I see more out of that.
A lot of it was game flow dictated, but you saw it last year. You know how many targets he had?
How many?
10.
Really? This week?
10 targets this week.
Ooh,
top 5
okay.
passes.
Okay. I would not have. Okay.
I know it might be an aberration, but. 10 targets. I like targets.
Yeah, no, targets, especially daily fantasy, but for fantasy in general, targets are very, very important. How the hell does Case Keenum put up 37 points and look awful doing it? How do you put up 37 points and look awful doing it?
Todd Gurley put up 2 of those touchdowns.
I mean, he did, but Case Keenum was leading the offense.
Yeah, if you can call it that.
I mean,
your favorite wide receiver, Tavon Austin, scored 1 of them. But he doesn't look good. They don't look good.
They're 2-1.
I don't care.
They're 2-1.
I don't care. They beat Tampa Bay, who Jameis Winston doesn't know how to win. They gifted a win to L.A. I don't know. I got nothing.
I really have nothing on this game. I wrote down here Bucks defense a far cry from 2002.
Oh, far cry.
You look at a guy like Gerald McCoy. You look at a linebacker like Quan Alexander. There's pieces there, but. But it's not a complete picture by any stretch.
Look, you let the Rams put up 37 points after they haven't scored a touchdown all year.
Yeah.
It's back to the drawing board. It's shatter the drawing board and go get another drawing board.
Right. Yeah, I really like that linebacker. They got Quan Alexander. He's a good player. Seahawks 37, 49ers 18. The weird 18 shows up again, man. We keep getting these weird scores because of these extra points. Russell Wilson... left the game.
How long is he out? Because I have an idea.
Tell me what you're thinking.
I love Trayvon Boykin. I was all over him in the college game. If you're telling me I can get him at, let's take a look, I guarantee he's going to be min value because the prices came out before this thing ended the other day. Let's take a look. Trayvon, 5,000, min value. They're playing the Jets. All the Trayvon Boykin and Doug Baldwin. Just ship them over here this way. All of it.
Okay, I
like Trayvon Boykin a lot. Seven for 9, 65 yards, a touchdown, and a pick.
Here's my prediction on Russell Wilson.
I think he's out for a couple weeks.
I disagree with you.
Okay.
I think that Russell Wilson is going to be the Adrian Peterson freak genes, just heals up. Like, I have a kind of an adoration for Russell Wilson. For what he's done in the NFL and with what he has to work with, you know, with the height limitations and all that. I feel like Russell Wilson's going to play.
It looked awkward.
It did look awkward,
so did Dez. We didn't talk about that at all.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Dez.
I thought y'all lost Dez for a while. I thought Cole had a concussion immediately after that.
Have you seen the video of Cole Beasley getting knocked back in time?
No.
It's so funny. They show the video, and then Cole Beasley starts flying through the screen, and every time he goes through the screen, it's a new, and it's further and further back in time. It's funny, man.
I got to check that out.
It is funny. Yeah, Dez's injury looked bad, and Russell's pretty much the same to me.
Yeah.
My guess is he plays.
You think he plays against the Jets?
It's going to be Russell Wilson has earned that for me.
We'll talk about it Thursday.
Yeah. Absolutely. Russell Wilson has earned that for me. He gets he gets the benefit of the doubt with me until proven otherwise.
How about Christine Michael? Does he get the benefit of the doubt in the backfield for Seattle?
No.
Wow.
No.
I mean, that's pretty adamant.
Okay, first off, it's Kristen. It's pronounced Kristen.
We're throwing some comedy into.
Okay, no, I'm being serious. It's pronounced Kristen.
You can't call a grown man Kristen.
You can't call a grown man Christine.
Fair enough.
What the hell?
Fair enough.
Okay, I'm sorry. This is a guy who at A&M it was all speed. He went to the NFL. He tried to outrun everybody. He can't do it. Maybe he's figured it out. He's had a long time to try to figure it out. I think they started him out of a pure lack of options.
Well, that's definitely the truth because Thomas Rawls is not the answer.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. Christian Michael definitely got to show it to me more than 1 week. He had a good game.
He had a good game.
That's good for him.
Yep.
Congratulations. It was the 49ers. Calm down.
Okay. Speaking of the
49ers. Thinking about what Zeke's going to do with the 49ers next week. If Christian Michael does that, think about what Zeke's going to do.
Zeke's going to go 30 for 242 and try to get back that.
Should Colin Kaepernick start for the 49ers?
I think it's time. Why not?
What do you lose?
In the words of Donald Trump, what do you have to lose? What?
Okay. So you're on board with Cap starting.
Maybe not yet, but real soon.
Real soon. Okay.
Gabbert. 14 for 25, 119. What do you have, 49ers fans? What the hell do you have to lose?
Okay, my lasting memory of Cap was his last couple of games.
It's
real
bad. Real bad.
So I'm a little. Maybe he's improved. Maybe he's improved.
Maybe. I don't think so.
I don't see it. Chiefs 24, Jets 3. Hold on. Breaking news.
No breaking news.
No, I'm getting breaking news in my ear right now. Ryan Fitzpatrick just threw another interception.
So, yeah, the Jets. Fitzpatrick, what happened? When's the last time you saw somebody throw six picks?
I don't know, but I'm not Brett Favre in the playoffs against the Rams back in like 2000 or 2001 maybe, I don't know, way back in the day. Six interceptions. Romo's had some five turnover games.
Yeah. Romo had a five-pick game in the first half against Buffalo on Monday night.
I think it was five turnovers. I think a couple of them were fumbles. They won that game.
Well, the Jets didn't.
The Jets did not win that game.
The Jets did not win the game. Give the freaking ball to Matt Forte. That's all I'm saying. I'm sorry. I had a couple conniptions over the weekend because when you have Marvin Jones Jr., Jordy Nelson, Jarvis Landry, and then D'Angelo Williams and C.J. Anderson or Matt Forte.
Well, you're just seething over.
I mean, I could have had 220.
I can literally see the steam billowing off the top of your head right now.
I had an opportunity to really do some damage in the Millionaire Maker, and my running backs just completely shit the bed.
Yeah.
That's just all there is to it.
That's what happens, my friend. I tell you one thing. I'm never complimenting Ryan Fitzpatrick ever again.
You can't.
Last week on Thursday, I was talking about how much I like him. I've always liked him as a quarterback, and then he goes out and throws six interceptions. Thanks for that, Ryan. You're a stand-up classy guy.
He wanted to give Eric Berry some Christmas presents, early ones.
Oh, okay. I mean, I've always liked Eric Berry, so there you go.
Kansas City.
All right, our last game, the Colts 26 over the Chargers. Seriously, dude, do you just like being wrong? Like, is it your favorite thing? You are so all over this game, man. You were no way that Indy was going to win this game.
How could you? Indy looked awful. The first 2 weeks of the season.
They did.
You lose your number two receiver, so apparently instead of shifting over and giving more coverage to T.Y. Hilton, they just let him run amok. 11 targets, 174 yards, and a touchdown.
You know what's funny
about... Frank Gore learned how to play football again.
Well, he never forgot how to play football. That guy's a fountain of youth.
Forced fumbles. Indianapolis defense, though. Four forced fumbles.
That'll do it.
Recovered three of them. I know that I've hailed his, or sang his praises a little bit. Not saying his praises, but I've given him positive feedback. Melvin Gordon is not NFL ready 100%. He's got some things to learn.
He definitely had some things to learn. He's better than he was last year.
Of
no
course.
Question.
You can't be worse. You can't be worse.
You could be, Trent Richardson. Trent Richardson's worse.
Who's the one for Donald Brown or the?
Oh my God, Donald Brown, get out of here with that.
2 yards a carry.
He was racking them up
for San Diego last year.
Tyrell Williams, we were on him a little bit. He was not the offensive focal point. It was spread around for what they did do offensively.
He did lead the team in targets.
He did.
It wasn't worth much.
It wasn't worth much. Yeah, and it wasn't. I thought they were really going to focus on him. They didn't. We talked a little bit about Kelvin Benjamin last week, and there was a. I wish I would have made this point last week because it was perfectly, perfectly illustrated this week. When you look at the difference between Kelvin Benjamin and Cole Beasley, two small slot receivers, dramatically different players. Kelvin Benjamin, the closer he is to the line of scrimmage, the less effective he is. He dropped a couple of first down catches close to the line, you know, third and three, third and six or whatever, because he's not good at that close line. He's a deep guy.
You got to get him
Cole
in that space.
Beasley, The further from the line of scrimmage he is, the less effective he is. The first catch in his career where the ball traveled 20 yards was against the Bears Sunday night. So dramatically different players playing the same position, the same body type, very similar, but dramatically different. So I found that very interesting over the weekend. I wish I would have made that point on Thursday. Andrew Luck engineers another comeback.
Jack Doyle looks, I'm not saying I'm all over him, but I like Jack Doyle a lot. But Andrew Luck, he's a winner.
Yep.
He hasn't been in the first 2 weeks, but Andrew Luck is a winner.
No, I think Andrew Luck is definitely one of those quarterbacks as a winner. He definitely has a lot of a lack of talent around him everywhere. So we're going to move on. That's done with all of our games for today. There's a topic that I want to get into a little bit. I was reading an article about this here about 2 months ago, and it is breaking down an analog between the stock market and daily fantasy. Have you read anything about this? You know anything about this at all?
Sounds like a very interesting article title. I have not read
it. It was a very interesting article title, or not title, but there was a very interesting article. It was talking about how the stock market is a rigged system. It's not necessarily rigged as in you can't win, but it's designed so that the very, very top level people with the most information are the ones who are going to win.
Absolutely.
And they are just taking money from the amateurs, people who are getting into it or whatever.
I mean, the similarities and the mirrors between that and daily fantasy are astounding.
Astounding.
That's exactly what's
happening. That's exactly what's going on, yes.
And that's why I argue
tirelessly.
Folks. I've been up for a while. Tirelessly, that it is a game of skill. It is an information-based game, as is poker, Nolan and Hold'em in particular, and the top, the cream of the crop, is going to profit. They're going to prey on amateurs.
On the amateurs.
And that's what happens.
And so I found it interesting how much we, even as far more knowledgeable about the game than an average fan, we're the amateurs, and in particular, you're the amateur that they're preying on in a lot of situations. I mean, you do okay.
I'm a winning daily fantasy player. However, the analytics and the Excel sheets and What is it called?
I don't know, so I can't help you here.
Well, they have these a type of way that the top guys play.
You talking about algorithms?
It's algorithm based, but it's keep going. I'll find it.
Well, okay. Well, anyway, the whole point
was that they have these scripts, and it's a way to really play volume, and that's where you see the top guys like the not the Al Smizzles, but the Sahil Sahuds, E. Hafner. I mean, a lot of these top names on Roto Grinders and the leaderboards play these high volume scripts where they just have algorithms and formulas where they just import guys and just tweak a little bit and tweak a little bit, tweak a little bit, and you see them at the top of the leaderboards every week. It's a massively information-based.
Yeah. So I found that very interesting. A buddy of mine and I got into a little bit stock market stuff here last year at about the same time that...
You dabbled?
A little bit. We got into it a little bit, and I'm talking day trading.
Yeah.
I'm talking day trading.
get it in the veins. I can't imagine what day trading would be like.
It is intense. And if you ever want to feel like you just are lost and you have no idea what's going on, even though you've spent like 100 hours researching something, go try that. Okay, it is insane. I feel like daily fantasy is very much getting pushed more and more in that direction.
Baseball especially. Baseball especially.
Yeah, yeah.
You can just research tirelessly. Basketball is a little different. Football, there's so many things that could happen.
Right.
On football
yes,
field
yes. But baseball defense. Is such an analytics-driven game. It's gotten that point. Would you look at what the Billy Bean and the Moneyball and all that is doing that sort of thing? So what is the deal with the Odell Beckham and Dez Bryant sharing a catch before the game and all of this? Friendliness, the hatred between teams of the 80s and 90s, and going back, I'm sure, is just gone now. Do you have any kind of insight into why that's going on?
Well, I think these are people. I think these people forge relationships. I think you saw it in the UFC over the weekend with Big Country Roy Nelson and Bigfoot Antonio or Bigfoot Silva. And these two guys are in the cage trying to, for lack of a better term, kill each other, hurt each other severely badly. I think that a lot of this just blood sport type rivalries. I mean, look, Dallas hates Philadelphia, and there's multiple reasons why they don't like the Giants. But a lot of this just seething anger.
I disagree. I think that they're fine.
Dallas and Philadelphia?
Yes.
Well, they shouldn't be. Philadelphia fans cheered when Michael Irvin broke his neck.
Okay. Dallas fans and Philly fans hate each other. Yes, absolutely. No question. I'm talking about the players on the field. They used to legitimately hate each other, the players.
Yeah, they did.
And that is gone by the wayside, with the exception of a few rivalries, which we'll get to the great one over the weekend. But it's kind of.
You're right. I'm all right with it, though.
I'm okay with it, too. I think the reason is, I think it's free agency caused this. Because that team might be the team that offers you the biggest contract.
That's true.
And so that's where you're going to want to go. Loyal. And if you've pissed off all the people on that team, you're going to be hating the locker room. It's going to suck for you. I think free agency kind of, over the course of a long time, necessarily changed the idea. I don't know if you saw the video of Dez and Odell playing catch before the game.
They had a catch.
But they did. And for a brief second, I was like, ugh, I hate that. And then I was like, man, it's a sport,
but
man.
Again,
they're playing a game. It's fun. It's fine.
The total access now, just because we see literally everything and we have the social media.
No, the team, they hated each other back in the day.
I mean, I know they hated each other back in the day, but now we're privy to all these other things off the field that we're going to learn about relationships between rival teams and players.
Yeah, you are. And you're right. There, to some degree, you are right. Did you see Odell Beckham crying on the field and get his ass kicked by a field goal net?
He got it. I mean, have you seen the Mortal Kombat?
Finish him.
It was, that's just quality editing. It wasn't BuzzFeed. It was Bleacher Report.
Okay,
And Odell Beckham is Sub-Zero, and there's a literal ball-kicking net on the other side. Round two. Fight.
Oh, that's great, man. That dude's got to calm down, dude. I told you last week I'm not a fan. He didn't have a good game.
He
ended up losing. Yeah. His emotions got the best of him. One thing I do find interesting, this is just my silver and blue colored glasses. Odell Beckham acts like that on the sideline. He's a fierce competitor. Dez Bryant acts like that on the sideline. He's a cancer. You ever notice that? I really hate that. Because they were on the announcing team was talking about how Dez, but Odell was a fierce competitor. That was really annoying.
Well, he's got bias all over in the media,
and that's not just contained in every direction. So the scouting tip of the week this week: learn everything about just one play. I don't think that enough people have any concept of how difficult that is. Put in game tape. If you don't have access to it, you can go to NFL.com. You can pay, I think it's $70 for the entire season.
Worth it.
You can watch every single game. You can rewatch the broadcast. You can rewatch the All-22 camera. That's the one that shows the coach's film.
Of course.
You can watch the end zone camera. You can see everything. And if you sit there and pick one play, just one play, and try to figure out what, especially on defense, what every single player's
job was on that play, what they're what they're supposed to do, it's incredibly difficult. There are NFL coaches that can sit down at the film, and they are, it's an educated guess, but they are guessing what a guy was supposed to do. Because you don't know for sure. Now, offensively, it's a little easier.
Especially on defense.
Yes.
Defense cannot be understated enough. There's so many things going on.
If learning about the NFL and becoming better at this is something that you want to do, buy the NFL Game Pass. It's, like I said, it's about $70 a season, so worth it. Pick one play a week and try to break down that entire play, and I promise you, you'll be a better fan.
Play a week, but you're going to be a better daily fantasy player or fantasy player in general.
Yes.
Buy that pack. I can't stress that enough. The top guys, the top dogs that are preying on the amateurs have that access to the information.
Yes, absolutely.
And that information, that footage is absolutely vital, and it's vital in every sport. It cannot be understated enough. When you have that access to watch and rewatch film, it's just paramount to watching on Sunday, because you're just following the ball. Let's just be honest. You're only following the ball.
Yes. Yeah, most people don't know. There's a book out there called How to Watch Football, and it goes into explaining to stop just watching the quarterback or just watching the ball. I recommend that book as well, but like I said, if you're interested and you want to become a better fan or a better daily fantasy player or whatever, break down one play a week. Just one. You'll be prompt. You'll be better. It's time for our Out of Bounds segment. This is kind of where we talk about a little non-sportsy type stuff.
You'll be a better Madden player as well.
You'll absolutely be a better Madden player. I can hardly be beat at Madden.
You want to talk about... Oh, well, I play FIFA, so we'll leave that there. But you want to talk about where you were wrong. You like Lethal Weapon.
I did.
A little bit.
It was pretty good, man. I think me being a father... And the story... Did you watch it at all?
I didn't.
Okay, they delve into the storyline of Riggs...
Backstory. Okay.
Because it's a prequel. The whole thing's a prequel.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Are these two characters supposed to be Mel Gibson and Danny Glover?
Yes. A long time ago, but set in the timing of now. That's the weird part. Like
are we supposed to suspend disbelief?
You're absolutely being asked to suspend your disbelief. Yes.
That's okay. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, yeah. Danny Glover's character, Murtaugh, he's wearing a Fitbit. Okay, so it's set in now, but it's a prequel. That part's a little weird, but I was okay with it. They delve into his backstory. Riggs, he was married and he was on his way to the hospital to meet his wife because she was going to have a baby. Their vehicle gets hit by a truck and he loses both the wife and the baby. And as a father, it tore me up. And they did a really good job of showing that and set up the kind of mildly suicidal character that Riggs was, or is, however you want to look at that. So it was actually better than I was expecting. I was a little bit okay with it.
I'm gonna have to check it out because it intrigued me when I saw it. When I saw the previews and the adverts for it, and I'm definitely gonna have to watch.
Yeah, check it out.
Yeah.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. When they brought in Ghost Rider, dude, I was what the hell are they doing? But it seems for one episode in, I was okay with it. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started out bad. Then Captain America Winter Soldier happened, and the events of Captain America Winter Soldier changed Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and it became a very different and much better show through seasons 2 and 3. By season 3, it was really good. They've added Ghost Rider. I was not happy about this. One weekend, I'm okay with it.
All right.
I'm okay with it.
There it is.
Things I dislike. Nothing is made well anymore, dude. Nothing.
Welcome to 2016.
Everything I buy is just cheap crap.
Yeah.
Even expensive crap that I buy is cheap
you
crap.
You want to talk about infuriating.
Yes.
If I spend up, not on daily, if I spend up on an item, which I don't do very often.
Yeah, I expect it to be better.
Damn right.
Yeah, there are a few places here and there in our economy where you can find where if you spend a little more, you do get an actual better. I'm not talking about the quality of the product in terms of like what it does. I'm talking about the materials that it's used to make it, the longevity of
the product.
They're awful. I have a really, really expensive Logitech gaming headset. It broke within like 2 weeks of buying it. It's really expensive. It's totally it's not.
It's interesting you said the headset because the... potential sponsors, the most expensive pair, I've been in radio industry for about 15 years now, the most expensive pair of headphones I've ever bought were these little bad boys, the Bose headphones. I think they cost me $200. I bought them at it was well before the Beats and Dre's and everything came out. They weren't great. The noise cancellation, I mean, like I said, they were okay, and then one of the channels goes out. then you're just, yep. I can't say that word.
Yeah. Yeah. You're done.
You're done.
You're done.
That's it. $200. I got nothing.
Awful, awful, awful.
Infuriating.
It's infuriating. The other thing I don't like right now, the YouTube Heroes program, if you're not aware of it, YouTube has started a program where you can... You start off by adding captions to people's videos, and you get points for that. And then as you get more and more points, you can do different things with those and get invited to by YouTube to go to these programs and stuff. But more importantly, as you get more points and move up, you can start flagging videos for content that is inappropriate or whatever. And you're already seeing...
I've already got problems with it.
Yes, you're already seeing a YouTuber who doesn't like another YouTuber goes out and says, hey, I don't like that YouTuber. Let's get his stuff removed. And so he goes over there. And so you got the social justice warriors and the anti-social justice warriors, or the feminists and the anti-feminists.
Look,
and
you want to talk about something I don't like.
Christians and the atheists, like, just removing each other's videos like crazy. It drives me nuts.
This generation of social just... not even complaining, the generation and the era now of social being offended.
Yeah, just, yes.
Everybody's offended at something, and your voice is supposed to matter. It,
the safe spaces kind of.
The whole, all of it.
Right.
All of it.
I didn't really want to get into the politics of the social justice. It's more about, for me, the YouTube heroes and them putting themselves in a situation where I'm not saying that I'm for social justice or against it. I'm saying that the people who are for it and the people who are against it are now getting each other to remove each other's videos, and the Christians and the atheists are at each other's throats on YouTube, and the feminists and the anti-feminists and whatever, and it's a stupid program. I can't believe they ever thought it would work, and it's ruining YouTube right now.
And I'll go a step further. Like I said, the just generation of being offended and thinking that's just the end all be all because I've offended you, that I'm supposed to issue some sort of public apology, mm-hmm. or come out and just kiss your ass basically and this, that, and look, that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. It's not. This country was founded on the belief of the First Amendment. I have the freedom of speech.
Freedom of speech was put in place specifically to protect unpopular speech.
Once we lose that,
it all goes downhill.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that.
Absolutely.
So what else you got for things you like and don't like?
Oh, I really don't like the direction that this country's headed in, regardless of who wins.
Yeah, we're both winning.
It's
yeah.
just terrifying. I mean, like you said, I asked because I'm not watching it. I'm, first of all, not watching the debate. Millions of people did. I can't. There's not enough alcohol.
They're saying that it was about 100 million people watched.
I'm sorry. we are literally looking square into the face of A, Idiocracy 2016,
yes.
where literally a reality TV star becomes president, or B, a criminal that should be spending 20 to 40 years in behind bars.
I mean, I don't really want to make the show too political, but we're at the end.
We're at the end. If you're with us this far, you're
hooked. We hooked you.
My buddy Mark said the other day, hey, I couldn't put it down. Hey, it's fantastic. We're going to talk about other stuff. It's just, what happened? What happened? I'm not watching. I mean, I'll probably hear a couple of sound bites from the debate, but I asked Bryce as soon as I came in because he was talking about it.
Yeah.
I was like, so what's going on? Basically, Daniels, the two worst people in the country are vying for president. So that's where we are.
Yeah, that's definitely where we are. I tell you what, man.
And people are joking about it. And, yeah, I guess it's humorous. However, if you can just get away from the fact that one of them is going to be the freaking leader of the free world.
Last week I made a comment that I had some suspicion about why Hollywood is doing what it's doing and it's political and I want to get into it. Mm-hmm. I actually had several listeners message me and want to know what it was.
Yeah.
And I actually had a few listeners that were like, man, you should do a political podcast.
I've been told that one or two times.
Yeah, I can talk politics all day long, and I would just thoroughly piss off both sides. So it'd be a lot of fun. what you got into what you don't like? Tell me what you like right now, man.
What do I like? Oh, I love the state of the UFC right now. I know this is a NFL podcast, and I talk a lot of UFC because I really, really love watching high level fights. And It just has never been better. It's never been better. We're gearing up for UFC 205, which is in Manchester, England. It's Bisping and Henderson. It's not the greatest main event, but every weekend there's a card. Some of them are free over on FS1. The pay-per-views have been fantastic. The names that we have in the sport are fantastic right now, from your Conor McGregors to your Chris Cyborgs. She just destroyed Lena Landsberg the other day. It took her two rounds, but the way that she fights, I can't wait to see her fight Ronda Rousey. I'm looking forward to seeing Ronda back in the cage. The Daniel Cormiers. We're going to get John Jones versus Anthony Rumble Johnson soon to fight Daniel Cormier. You've got Stipe Miocic as the heavyweight champ.
I really like him.
I like him a lot, too, and he beat my boy Alistair Overeem. Yep. But I just love the direction that the UFC and mixed martial arts is heading in, and it's just a very exciting time to be an MMA fan.
Yeah, I like the UFC. I'm not as big a fan as you are, but I really do enjoy watching the UFC, and just like in football,
there's so much going on.
Like, it makes me want to get out film or go to a Brazilian jiu-jitsu place.
UFC Fight Pass, I pay $8 a month, and I can watch anything I want. Right. Exactly. I want to go see these training sessions, Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
I want to learn all the little
things. The intricacies between Muay Thai and jiu-jitsu and the judo and just wrestling, pure striking. It's a chessboard, and you just move your pieces. It's a very violent chessboard, but it's a chessboard.
Okay, it's a chessboard, but it's that Star Trek chessboard. Yeah. It's like multi-level. There's like 7 levels to it or whatever. It's more complicated than chess.
No, very much so. Very much so, as is football. And football has a lot of correlations between chess as well.
It absolutely does. And if you are interested in all of the chess-like, qualities of football, you should definitely go check out footballogy.com. It's the study of all things football. Those guys are incredible. They are the sponsor for the show.
Love the segue and the sign off.
Dude, I'm telling no, you're not going to do this on the morning show every day. I have to point out to Aaron that it's not a professional segue if you point out the segue. Don't point out the segue.
You can point out the segue. The curtain
no,
is lifted.
No, you did it, man. You pointed out the segue. Get out of the studio. We're out.
We are back Friday. We'll record Thursday. It is the 2-point conversion with Bryce and Daniels. It's where we always go for two. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you on Thursday. Good night.